It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WAVE. Great to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich was back in Georgia yesterday visiting Kennesaw State University for a town hall meeting on behalf of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Newt Gingrich joins us now. Mr. Speaker, welcome back.
Well, it's always great to be home, and Kennesaw was terrific, and the crowd was great, and I'm very excited about how the campaign is coming.
You talked quite a bit about the basket of deplorables comment from Secretary Clinton, and you said it's an example of how liberals don't know how to debate, implying, I guess, that they put people in generalized baskets. But what would you say, though, to someone who questions whether Mr. Trump has any moral ground to stand on, whatever one thinks of Secretary Clinton's comment, because of his generalized comments on Mexicans and Muslims and his impersonations of disabled people, just to name a few?
They talk about with disabled people was one particular reporter who Trump had been interviewed by before. And I don't think so. It's a big generalization to go from interacting with one guy.
Certainly, but
he himself has come back and made very clear that he is talking about terrorists when he was talking about dealing with the issue of Muslim immigration. And he's come back and made clear that he recognizes and has said that most immigrants are not, in fact, criminals, but he's also made a point which is valid, which is that there are estimates of somewhere between 1 and 2 million criminals who have gotten into the United States illegally. So I think there are places where he has to be more careful in his language, but they use words like racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, to use her list, because they can't debate the issues. So Trump goes to Detroit and Milwaukee and says, we need to fix the inner cities. They scream racism.
Trump said they have to fix the inner cities. They did that because he said, again, in fairly generalized terms, addressing the black community, saying, you know, your schools are terrible, you're going to get shot. Again, a very general picture of a complex community.
That's true. On the other hand, in Chicago, they've been averaging a shooting every 2 hours. 3,000 people have been shot in Chicago this year.
Certainly, but is that the entire African-American community? And that's how many people heard it.
If you look at where he was speaking in Detroit, a city which has been devastated by liberal policies, and speaking in Milwaukee, which is the sixth poorest city in the country, I think he was clearly referring to situations where it is fair to say there are also several million people trapped in poverty, violence, and ignorance by liberal policies and liberal bureaucracies that don't work.
But that speech was delivered to an almost entirely white audience.
And that's because that particular rally had already been organized in the suburbs, but they felt that they had to switch the topic because of what had just happened in Milwaukee. And I thought that that was, in fact, the right decision. Now, he comes back a week later, and he gives a similar powerful speech to a black church in Detroit. And so what's the complaint going to be this time?
Are you saying, though, that you don't hear racist voices among some of Mr. Trump's supporters?
I'm saying that, to take the most the example used by Democrats, Trump has personally, both on television and in writing, repudiated David Duke. And yet you will hear Democrats cite David Duke as the example. Now, when a guy goes on TV personally and says, I repudiate David Duke, you'd think he gets some credit for being anti-racist.
We're already very short of time, but I wanted to pick up on one other subject here. You were a major supporter of the North American Free Trade Agreement. You helped get it through Congress,
right,
saying it would help the entire continent compete with nations like China. Now, Mr. Trump has said it's the worst trade deal in American history, and he would scrap it if Mexico and Canada will not renegotiate. Would you oppose any move to scrap it, particularly if you have a role in a Trump administration?
Somebody once asked John Maynard Keynes why he had changed his opinion, and he said because the facts had changed. And I think our relationship with Canada has worked very, very well. I think in a number of ways our relationship with Mexico has not worked nearly as well, and that reexamining and rethinking the agreement is perfectly reasonable.
But you said as recently as a couple of years ago that it has helped us as a region in our competition with China, and that you would rather have jobs close to the U.S. than have jobs as far away as China.
Well, that's true, which is why I'd also want to place far more emphasis on renegotiating with China than I would with Mexico. But I do think we have to recognize that the if you look at the difference right now in balance of trade, Mexico has done extraordinarily well, and we have not done nearly as well out of the agreement.
So you're saying you would move to scrap the agreement or would support scrapping NAFTA if Mexico and Canada do not renegotiate?
Well, I think they both will renegotiate, but I think you're always faced with that choice. I mean, if you end up saying to somebody, "I don't think this is a good agreement anymore," and they say, "I don't care, we're going to keep you in a bad agreement," you then have the obligation of calling their bluff.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, Mr. Speaker, thank you so much.
Great to be with you again.